This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known people about their lives, their careers, and navigating those difficult moments along the way. I'm Giles Perry-Phillips, and with me is Jim Daly.
Jim Daly. Sound like I'm a sort of a boxer being announced into the ring.
Yeah, or like Bullseye in one.
Yeah. Oh, Bullseye was a good show, wasn't it? It was
obviously. Yeah. Fun. I shared a clip the other day it was like a classic Bullseye, you know, that when they win the big prize at the end, you know, sometimes they give like a speedboat to someone in like Yorkshire. It was a similar thing, but it was like top fashions of the day. You can go to M&S and get all the new top fashions for you and your family. And it was all like these kind of, it was like you could spend like £1,000 on new fashions. And there was these two guys in kind of darts shirts, you know,
really baggy. For
fuck's sake, I was hoping we'd get the caravan, you know. Yeah. It was quite funny. But yeah, classic. I mean, I think they should bring it back and keep those kind of prizes.
And the fashion as well.
Who would host it now, though? I suppose you'd have to have like Peter Kay or something. Who would be an equivalent?
Northern.
Jason comedian. Manford.
John Bishop. Jason Manford. Yeah, that's a great shout.
Yeah.
So anyway,
not to stereotype those. It could be, you know, it doesn't, you know, darts players. There are darts players in the South as well.
Yeah, but it felt like a northern show. I think that's okay. It's like a very northerny sort of thing. But that's fine. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, mate. And well, I've got a bit of a headache, but apart from that, I'm okay. Been drinking lots of water, which maybe need the toilet. Anyway, apart from that, I'm good. I'm excited about this week's episode. We've got Katarina Robinson on, who is a fantastic comedian, an actor, social media content creator. She's absolutely lovely. So it's been a really, really nice chat with her. I'm looking forward to sharing the episode.
Yeah, we talked about all sorts, didn't we? It was really, really fascinating. I obviously talked about content creation and how that, you know, how that's different now from, you know, when we probably started out in our various different things, like, you know, obviously being in a band years ago and you starting out in comedy. It's obviously evolved and changed now, and we're putting content out into the public sphere as soon as we've kind of created it. So it's an interesting thing. But yeah, I mean, she's prolific stand-up and does lots of shows with her comedy partner Kat Ronson, so the two KRs, and they've got some really good shows coming up. The Whoring Twenties is their show that they do as a duo, and they've been doing some big gigs in London, and yeah, she's just doing really well. So it's really lovely to talk to her. I've been trying to sort it out for ages, and she's just a really lovely person, so it's great to have her on.
Yeah, we've timed it not great because their show is this weekend, at time of recording, but time the pod comes out, it will have gone. So we either need to record it though, like weeks before, so we can promote it, or afterwards we could ask how it went. And we've sort of like done it in that little sort of purgatory window, unfortunately, but I'm sure it went great. And if you went along to it, then do tweet us or tweet her and let us know what you thought.
I'm sure they'll be doing lots more.
We'll put her, exactly. So we'll put her social media handles and stuff in the show notes, so you can follow her. And I mean, she's someone definitely worth following online, because she's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger as well. So you definitely want to sort of jump on board now. Speaking of shows, am I okay to promote a couple of live shows as well, Giles? While we're sort of talking about shows. And
okay. Yes, of course.
Well, thank you very much. So I've got, if anyone lives near Oxford, if you're Oxford based, I'm doing the Oxford Comedy Festival on Friday, July the 22nd at the James Street Tavern at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are £8, and you can get them from oxfordcomedyfestival.co.uk. Very much looking forward to that. I've not done that before, but it looks like a lovely festival. So if you are local, then please do come along. And then I'm going to the Edinburgh Fringe. So if anyone is heading up to Edinburgh in the month of August, I'm there for the entire month, from the 4th till the 28th, although I'm having a few days off in the middle to go to my brother's wedding in Ireland, which is very well timed, Seb. Thanks for that. But if you are heading up to the Fringe, please do come and see me. I'm at 4:30 every day at the Grass Market Centre in just the Tonic Grass Market Centre. Our show, it's called Jim Daly Football and Fatherhood. And please do come along. I've been doing a lot of previews of it recently, and people seem to be enjoying it, which is lovely. So, if you're around for either of those, Oxford or Edinburgh, please do come along. It'd be lovely to see you, and come and say hi after the show as well. So that's it, Giles. My admin's done.
That's fantastic. Yeah, there's a great show. I went and saw it recently in Brighton. It was really, really lovely. And Jim, you look like you're having time too.
There's a reference to something that comes up in the pod in a minute, but I really enjoy performing it. It's a fun show to do. It's not a political show. Like, it's not a ranting and raving show. It's a sort of light-hearted, sweet, gentle comedy show about being a dad and football, and it's very silly, and I'm hoping that means it's quite sort of accessible, and people seem to just be enjoying a sort of a very gentle hour's comedy. So if you're someone that likes that kind of comedy, then please do come along, because it's quite a sweet show as well. You know, it's a show about first year being a dad, so there's a lot of myself in there, and I do enjoy performing it, and I hope that comes across as well to the audiences. But so far, they've all been incredibly sweet and lovely, and so I appreciate everyone that's come so far, especially you've been twice, which I think makes you some sort of like special sort of gold member. Somehow need some sort of reward or something, which I'll work something out. I'll get you a
I was
badge.
Some sort of loyalty card, you know, so
I get you a loyalty card.
So like 10th gig free or something.
Exactly
third gig.
All right, third. Come to Edinburgh, and then even though that'd be incredibly expensive to go to. But anyway, so that's enough of me talking about my gigs. I think we should we'll get on to Kat's episode. Before we do that, shall we read out a tweet?
You've got a tweet, haven't you? You've got a lovely tweet.
Really nice tweet here. So it's from Chatterley Natalie, which is a great name, at Chatty Natty X. She's put, this last week was grueling and I was ready to jack it all in, sell up and hit the road in a camper van. It would have been easy to knee jerk, but I didn't. I slept on it a lot and I found my equilibrium. My hashtag blank moment has passed and I have clarity. All thanks to stopping, going back to the topics covered in a lot of the episodes of Blank Pod that I've listened to, and remembering even the most successful people have blank moments. Mine was a lack of clear vision, no direction, and imposter syndrome. Lots of things that come up on the pod, Charles. Whatever you do, no matter how tough it seems, keep going. That's such a lovely, really lovely tweet. It absolutely just resonates with everything we talk about on the pod. And it's so lovely to hear that we've helped in some small way, and our guests have helped. And thank you, Natalie, for sending us that, because that really touched me.
It
means a lot.
That was a lovely message. Thank you so much. I'm so pleased that, you know, some of the things that we talk about on here, these podcasts, really resonated with you, and that that has helped you with what you're going through at the moment. So and hope you're okay, and do keep in touch with us. We'd like to hear from you more.
Definitely. And you can keep in touch with us by Twitter, as Natalie has, or Instagram and Facebook, and our handle on all three is
@blankpod.
Indeed. But anyway, should we crack on with the episode?
I think we should.
So this is the fantastic Katarina Robinson on the Blank Podcast.
And Edinburgh is relentless, I think. I've never done a full run before. I've only ever done like half runs. And I mean, that was kind of enough, to be honest. So I don't know what this is going to be like. And that was with other people. This is the first time on my own, which is probably going to add another level of sort of challenge to it. But I've tried this year to like put more effort into marketing. So I've bought one like giant poster down in Bristol Square. And I've bought some like rail posters and stuff in the hopes that that translates maybe into a bit of sort of traffic into the show, or at least gives people the feeling that like
you're proper.
Oh, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he looks good.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's got a poster.
He must be good. Exactly. Yeah. But I genuinely think there is an element of that sometimes, that it is a bit sort of smoke and mirrors, and it is just creating like. A buzz and an image,
and a hype,
yeah, which I've never been good at doing. So I don't know whether that'll work this year or not, because otherwise it's just flyering, and flyering is just like completely soul destroying.
Do you pay people to do that for you though? Do they have like flyers?
You can pay people to do it, yeah, but I mean, it is, yeah, it's not that fun doing it yourself.
Also, I guess with the paying people, like, you, there's the risk of like walking past a bin and seeing all your flowers in it. I was going to say, it's a lot of trust there, isn't there?
Well, I used to do flyering for bars and things like that. I used to go hide in a coffee shop and hope they never find me.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd be like, I'm done.
Yeah. There's a massive stack of flyers in the coffee shop on the side. Yeah, that was a really prominent place to put them. I thought it was great.
When there's just so much foot traffic in this one cafe, I'd really just like target.
So
when I went up in 2019, so I did a football show with my mate Dave, who I do a lot of stuff with, and we only did a 10 day run, so I got to go home early. But he did the whole run on his own for his solo show, and he was playing flyers. And one day, I think it was 2019. I think it was a particularly wet year. It felt like it rained every day I was there, and I think it was one day. He was just like walking by, just like see how the flyers are doing and stuff. And he saw one of them literally just put a whole lot in the bin. He like witnessed it.
Oh,
and he was like, oh, and your pet. I mean, to be fair, they don't.
Well, it's probably not like loads of money, but I was just thinking.
Flyers don't get paid enough. They do not like get paid enough really for what they do. But the going rate is like £10 an hour. But I mean, really, it should be more than that. But I think that was quite a soul destroying moment for Dave. Although he had quite a good year. He did a show called Crazy Cat Laddie, and he had a couple of posters down on Potter Row, like, this is why I've done it, because he had a big one. And he pretty much was packed out most. He was Glow Bar down on Nidri Street, so it's quite a good location. And he was packed out most days. And every day he had people coming in with like cat t-shirts on, or like big cat fans. So even though the show wasn't really about cat, he like put photos of his cat.
Ah, see, that is good marketing.
But it was really interesting. Yeah. So on his poster, he had like a sort of lint, you know, the lint thing that you have for like cat fur and stuff. And so he made it like, so that was really interesting. Again, I learned a lot that year. I was like, oh, okay. So if you're really clever with your marketing, and I think he did it. That was almost by accident. But if you do sort of like hit a little niche, look professional, you can get people to your show. If you're not someone that has like loads of credits or quotes or reviews and stuff, which like most of us aren't, if you're not on a TV name. If you're a TV name, it's probably a piece of piss. But if you're anyone, the rest of us, playing the game.
This is all good content. We should have recorded all this. I'm going to hit record on the thing. We don't redo intros. We do them afterwards, if that's all right with you, Kat. And we're just...
that's fine, yeah.
We're just...
Recording in progress.
You start, Giles. I'll just try and sort out my audio as well. It's being a bit funny.
Okay.
Oh no, it should be working. Input device. It's saying, hang on, it's saying no input. You just keep chatting.
Well, I can hear you.
I'll work it out.
You sound clear, yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, cool. Right, yeah. I'm trying to record it on Logic.
Katerina, okay. Thank you so much for being on the pod. We really appreciate you coming on, especially on what is actually a bank holiday on a Thursday, which is always a bit weird. Are you doing much for this Jubilee? Because it's Jubilee weekend.
I mean, I've got my show on tomorrow at Leicester Square Theatre, which I'm super nervous about, but excited at the same time. So that's kind of my Jubilee plans, is the show. And then I'm definitely going to be having lots of drinks afterwards and chilling out. So yeah, that's pretty much my full plan for the Jubilee. So yeah.
tell us about the show.
So it's with my comedy partner, who is also called Kat. So we're Kat and Kat. And the show's called...
That makes life easier.
It does. It was so funny because when we met on Facebook, which is such a random way to meet someone. And we basically both noticed that we have pretty much the same name. So I'm Katerina Robinson and she's Kat Ronson.
Oh, KR, both KRs.
Yeah, we were like, that's a sign.
Kat Rose.
Yeah, so we were like, oh, we have to get together and do something. And then we just started making sketches. And then the show's called The Whoring 20s. So roaring, but whoring. And it's all about being a whore in your 20s, pretty much. And approaching...
That's what it says on the tin.
It says on the tin, yeah. And just different things that we've gone through kind of as like women in comedy. Things about like approaching our 30s and how we sort of like feel about that. And yeah, it's pretty much a full-on sketch show, majority of it, and then a bit of stand-up like thrown in, but it's majority of it is sketch. So
it's nice that you've been able to find... I mean, I know it's weird meeting people on Facebook, but it's nice that you've been able to find someone not only with the same initials but with the same kind of comedic sensibilities and stuff. And I think collaboration, I love collaboration. Obviously we do this podcast together with another person. I guess in comedy as well, that's really interesting. Do you guys always, is there disagreements ever? Do you butt heads on things, or is it all quite, you know, nice?
A little bit. I mean, to be honest, we always have the same ideas on things, but we always say like, I'm more the like business mind out of the two of us.
Okay.
So I
you do admin.
I do the admin, sort of take the reins a little bit. But we'd like such different personalities. Like we basically call ourselves, so I'm the Southern Cat and she's the Northern Cat. So she's got a proper strong Northern accent. I'm from the South. So we kind of have different personalities, but we work just very well together as like a comedy team. So yeah, it's good fun.
It's a stroke of luck, really, isn't it? Like you found each other that way through Facebook, but then to, as Charles says, to be kind of on the same wavelength. I think you need a lot of luck in the creative industry sometimes, and it just, you know, I guess it was almost meant to be that you guys were meant to meet, and then turns out you're sort of on the same page.
Yeah, no, it was very lucky. I mean, at first it was interesting because when we both sort of we like chatted on Facebook, we met up, and then we kind of got the vibe that we both felt like very different people, like how we are as people. So we were like kept talking, and then we kept seeing each other at like gigs and things like that. And then we were like, oh, well, maybe we should like make some sketches together and just see how it goes. And then we started making sketches, and it just felt so like natural. It didn't even feel like we were working as such. It was just very improvised, you know, bouncing ideas back and forth. And then we kind of just kept going from there. And yeah, pretty much where we're at now.
Can I ask about the meeting up? Because I found when I've met people that I've become friends with on the internet, it's always a bit weird. It can be quite awkward.
Well, it's quite a funny story how we met. So she was basically doing a poetry night, one of these like spoken words nights, and was like, oh, would you want to come watch me perform? And then we can chat afterwards. And I was like, okay, that's quite a nice sort of way of meeting each other. So okay, cool. So I got to this poetry night, and there's me thinking she was going to perform some poem of like, I don't know, like I've heard spoken word nights before and they're always quite dramatic and quite like intense, but she was performing this poem about her clit, which is so and I was watching it and I found it so funny. I was like, yeah, she's my type of woman. Okay. And then after that, it just kind of, the ice had broken. Chatting from there. But
that's quite bold on her part, because like it could have been another scenario where she does that poem, looks back in the audience, and your chair is just empty.
Like, run.
Right, not for me at all. But I think it's now, I think collaborations are important. I obviously do comedy with my mate Dave. We do football comedy, and unlike you guys, neither of us are the admin person, so that's where our but it is, again, it is just a bit, it was just a stroke of luck, really. Us, we met through my wife, who was performing with him doing Shakespeare in the Park, and we just got chatting afterwards, and again, like, you sort of felt like, oh, we're on the same wavelength here, and we both want to do some sort of like online content and stuff, so it just sort of burgeoned from that. But I don't know, I think life sometimes sort of throws you into these random little situations and give, like, opens a little door for you and gives you a little opportunity and sort of pushes you through, and it's like, you could try this might work. And I guess sometimes you have to be the sort of person that's open to sort of trying it.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I do my own sort of like sketches and things on my own, but sometimes it's nice just collaborating with someone else. Like, as much as I do enjoy sitting in my room making TikToks, it's nice to be out and like bouncing ideas with someone. So I'm grateful for having someone that, you know, is on my wavelength and gets that. So, yeah.
So going back to your youth, you went to Italia Conti, right?
Yes, I did.
So acting and performing, was that always something you wanted to do from a young age?
Yeah, no, I always wanted to act, always wanted to perform. And then kind of comedy and stand-up and all of that sort of came way later down my career. But acting and performing, like, I've always wanted to do that. So I went to drama school. I went to National Youth Theatre as well. I trained there for a little bit. And then I kind of just kept going with it, really.
How did stand-up come around?
Well, I mean, I'd left drama school and I'd kind of expected that I'm going to leave drama school, I'm going to get an agent, I'm going to suddenly be in some Netflix show and it's going to be, woo, like, great. But it just didn't happen. I left. I did get an agent, which I was really happy about, but I was auditioning very far and few, couple of commercials here and there, like things that I wasn't that passionate about. Like, I want to be auditioning for like TV shows and, you know, film and things like that. And then I kind of just thought to myself, okay, well, what do I want from acting? Like, what's the one thing I want to be in? And I thought, oh, I really want to be in like a comedy show. I'm good at comedy. And so I thought, well, maybe if I try stand up, it will just lead me into that and I can be more a comedy actor / comedian. So yeah, that's pretty much how I got into stand up. I just, well, I did a beginner's open mic and it went well. And then I just kind of kept going from there, really. It was more like the end goal is to, you know, get like a comedy acting role.
That's exactly what my wife did. She's also an actor and then wanted to get into more comedy roles. So she did a stand up comedy course, Logan Murray's course, used to be called the Amuse, I think it was the Amuse Moose course, which is what same one I did. So she met me on that course. So it was definitely worth doing, I would say, on her part.
Because she met you.
Yeah.
She met you.
No comedy, though.
The work hasn't really, but you know what? So same sort of idea, really. I think it's important to, if you sort of deep down know like something you're good at or you want to do, you can feel it in your gut sometimes, can't you? That you think, I need to follow this and give this a go. And there's always, I mean, I came to comedy really quite late. I was 28 when I did my first gig. So really a lot later than a lot of other comedians. But sometimes, and I didn't really have any sort of plans for it. I just sort of like did it and sort of like would see what would happen. But I think, again, going back to what I said earlier, you need to be someone that, like, this is going to sound really cheesy, but it's almost like sort of following your heart a little bit. Like, your heart and your gut will tell you quite often, like, you should try this, or you want to do this. And I think if you are the sort of person that's like a yes person, okay, I'll try it, it doesn't necessarily mean that's what you're going to do, you know, but it might open doors to other things. And I think it's just, and I've been thinking about this a lot recently, like the sort of the idea of sort of the yes and sort of approach to life and just sort of trying things, but not necessarily being too hung up on the destination or where it's going to end up, but more like just seeing where things go, because this is a mad industry. This is a really difficult industry. But if you're sort of open-minded and yes and, then things will happen, even if it's not necessarily what you wanted or thought would happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I feel like a lot of it has been like confidence building for me as well. Like when I was at drama school, obviously I was confident enough to perform and act, but I didn't really know what I wanted. I didn't really know what I was like, what's my niche, what's my like my thing. But I feel like through doing stand-up and doing sketches, I figured out, okay, this is like who I am, and this is the sort of stuff I find funny. But I feel like that's taken such a long time for me to figure out, because you're just growing as a person, and like, I don't know, in your 20s, you don't know who you are. And so like, I feel like I do now, but I mean, it's taken me like a really long time to sort of, you know, kind of figure out things. So if anything, it's definitely been like good confidence building, and you know, helped me find myself a bit more. So yeah
it's interesting, because it's come up on the pod before with actors and performers. They go to drama school and they're not really kind of they're not schooled in what it's like to feel. It's like that immediate kind of rejection, you know, you come out like you said, come out thinking, oh, I'm going to get an agent, I'm going to get lots of castings, I'm going to be in this, that and the other. But that's not always the case. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of, like showcasing that to the students, that this actually is not going to be that easy. I don't know if you had that experience, that they were a bit more kind of honest about those kind of things. Because it feels like it's not, sometimes it's unsaid that, you know, it's going to be hard.
I think they were quite honest, but at the same time, I went to drama school so young. I mean, I went when I was 18, did a 3-year course, and I just felt it was very much at that time, it was very much kind of geared around like theatre training and being a thespian, and I'm an actor. Like, it was very much like that. And I feel like if I was to go to drama school now, like as 29, I feel like it would be a bit more honest. And I think just because of how the world's changed as well, I think there would be a bit more honesty and not so much like, you know, the typical like actor training. I think it would be a bit more real, I guess. So
was that the kind of stuff you were doing then, proper like Shakespeare and kind of like traditional kind of plays and stuff?
Mainly Shakespeare to just we did TV acting, but I mean, again, it was like one class a week. It wasn't like super super intense, and realistically, like the stuff that most people want to be cast in is TV shows. And don't get me wrong, I'd love to be in like a big theatre show as well, but I think, you know, it's quite important to sort of, you know, have TV training and to know like that it's very different from theatre. Like, it's a completely different skill.
It seems crazy that you wouldn't do more of that kind of stuff, like you say, once a week or whatever it is. Like, it seems funny because that is such a big part of acting, you know. Lots of actors, I mean, there are obviously lots of actors stick to doing theatre work, but it is, you know, there's all sorts of different aspects to acting. It's a shame that that's not encouraged more, like that kind of stuff. It's almost like it feels sometimes that it's a bit kind of looked down upon in some way, you know. It's not proper acting because it's not
I mean, I feel like the way I've become more confident on camera is just through doing self-tapes and filming myself in my room and making sketches. Like, that's the way I've learned about camera and like angles, but not so much from drama school, more so from just actually trying it out myself and seeing, okay, I like how to set up a camera, how to, you know, do your lighting and like a backdrop and things like that. So I've kind of learned it for myself more so than from drama school.
Yeah, have you? I was thinking about this the other day, actually, about what comedians, or I guess any performers, have to, the skills you have to have now. When I started doing comedy, it was literally like, go and do open mics, do more open mics, be shit, be less shit, get slightly better, try and get some open spots on pro bills,
be shit that again.
Be shit again, which actually is something I was very good at doing. And then try and impress promoters, etc. Start traveling around the country, do all that. Now, if you want to be a comedian, you have to be doing all that. You have to also have an incredible editing skills. You probably have to have an Adobe subscription. You have to have a decent ring light, a decent camera, decent setup. You have to have knowledge, as you say, of angles and multi-camera shoots. All that. You have to do so much more now to get noticed. It's absolutely mad. Like, I just, and it probably is actually creating a whole generation of incredibly skilled and talented people. But you do, I think when I started, comedy could be a hobby that you could sort of see where it went. But now you almost have to sort of be all in from the start.
Yeah, definitely. And like, even when I audition for commercials, they'll say stuff like, oh, we want you to send the file in two different versions, one smaller, one bigger. Yeah. We transfer it, make sure it's labeled correctly. Yeah. Like, it's so many, you know, like steps just to send a, bearing in mind, like, if you get cast in the commercial, like, you're only going to be in it for like 2 seconds, but they make you go through all of these steps. And it's like, you have to be so like technical savvy now, instead of just being a performer, you have to also be good, like technically as well. So it's a lot of skills, I think.
I think that about self-tapes, because so my wife and I get self-tapes coming in and stuff, and often they ask for real couples and stuff. So we get quite a lot of those. We've got a toddler as well, so they ask for like kids stuff. We'll try and do that as well. And you're right, some of it is so technical, and you'll read the script. Sometimes you'll get a breakdown. Well, they'll be like, just read this line to camera, mid-shot, great. Or sometimes, if you're lucky, you get a little video from the director saying, thanks for doing this, here's what we want. That's amazing. Other times, you'll literally just get the whole script, and they'll be like, I'll just do that. And you're like, so you want me to do 3 different scenes from that probably won't even make the final edit? And you have to basically set up a whole studio in your house to do it. And Miranda and I are lucky in that we don't mind doing that. We both work from home. We'll give it a go. But I often think there must be so many performers out there, particularly probably older performers, who don't have the skills or the technology or the know-how. And we probably won't get these self-tapes. We won't get these castings. Not because of any lack of ability or drive, but because they haven't got the technical know-how that they shouldn't need. Back in the day, you would just go to the casting. You'd walk in the room, you'd do it, and you leave. You wouldn't have to think about all this other stuff. I know that lockdown has force people into that situation, but
do you think those days are done though, you guys? I don't know. Do you think, like, I mean, and there will be still occasions where you have to go in a room, but do you think for general like casting stuff, that's it now? It's just going to be all remotely done?
I think for ease, like, I mean, most auditions that I've been on recently have been self-tapes, like for the initial thing is a self-tape, and then they invite you in-person casting. Yeah. So, and I don't mind doing so. I mean, it's good in the sense that I don't have to pay any travel and I get to film at home, but at the same time I do miss going in, because a lot of the time it saves the time of me having to set up my camera and edit. Like that takes up a good 2 hours at least. Like by the time you've done the takes, edited it, we transferred it, like, you know, it takes up a good morning, I'd say. So sometimes it's almost easier to just hop on a train and you know, quickly do it in a room and go. Yeah.
Are you close to town? Are you close to London then, or?
I'm Wellingarn City. I think probably Dave actually.
Yeah.
I think. Isn't Dave's he from, in Wellingarn?
He's Welling. Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen him around here. So I'm sure he's around here.
There's probably lots of people that are probably avoiding him, seeing him. Oh, I know that face. Avoid that guy. Oh, he's the weirdo from Wellingarn City. Yeah, the Welling weirdo. That's Dave. Yeah, yeah.
But no, I'm not that far from London at all, though. I mean, it doesn't take very long to get in from here, like 25 minutes into like Finchley Park.
Yeah, there's really fast. There's fast trains, aren't there, really, from Welling? I always feel like if I get a casting, I have to go in. It feels like a work day. I feel like, oh, I'm actually working today. I'm going to town. Whereas if you're doing it at home, it's normally like trying to squeeze it in between sort of like other stuff, or you know, if I'm sort of looking after my daughter or whatever. But if you're going in, it's like, right, I'm going into town. It feels like I will nearly always treat myself with like a little hot chocolate on the way home or something. Like if I had a casting, or even if I hadn't, just like as a little worthy. But also, I do think you can get a vibe if you're in there with like the casting director, and you can give off a vibe or get a vibe that's harder to do over a self tape.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It feels like a disadvantage to be doing it. I mean, like you say, there are advantages. You don't have to, you can doing it remotely, but that actually having that contact with someone and how we connect with people. And I mean, if you want to get really deep, like energies that you give off and stuff can sometimes maybe make the difference, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, I think when you're in person with someone, like you said, you get a vibe of someone's aura and how someone is. And I think on camera, sometimes you just don't get that. But then also, if it is just for like a commercial where you're only going to be in it for 2 seconds, I don't think they really give a fuck about your aura. They just want to see you do the part. So I feel like it's not so much But maybe, I don't know, maybe for a film or for like something a bit bigger, they would want to see you in person first, because it is a bit more about that, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Because I mean, advert casting is normally literally what you look like. It doesn't
always a lot of the time.
Skills, yeah. Or it's just if you happen to have the right look, unless you say it'll be. Yeah, literally 2 seconds. So, yeah, I think you're probably right.
But I do know.
I've just got the hot chocolate. I just want the hot chocolate.
But I do have an actor friend that does casting still, like, remotely. And these are for, like, TV roles and stuff. So I think, yeah, I always find it just seems like a weird concept. But like I say, that's probably just the way it's kind of going. It makes it easier for everybody, I suppose. That, you know, they can just send files to the director who's also at home and not having to travel into London. So, yeah, I guess maybe that's just, yeah, the way it is. But
I've got a question, if that's okay, because I was I'll be honest with you guys, I was having one of these mornings where I was sort of tail spinning a little bit about sort of like life in general. It's a Thursday, it's my tailspin day, you know, that's just what happens.
You've got over the hump.
I've got over the hump Thursday. And now I'm just spinning out of control on a Thursday. But I was, because it's funny, you're talking about your show and like sort of being in your 20s but approaching 30s and obviously the feelings that kind of brings up and stuff. I turned 38 this week, so I'm having the same thing, but with approaching 40. And I remember the sort of get approaching 30s and stuff, and I'd just started doing comedy. So I maybe wasn't quite in the mindset of like, right, where am I with this? I was just enjoying it and see what was happening. Now that 40's looming, I'm a bit more like, oh, fuck, what am I doing? Like, what have I done? Where am I heading? What have I achieved? All this kind of stuff, all the comparisons to other people and stuff. And I was just wondering, like, why, whether you guys feel the same about that, or whether you have the same sort of anxieties around these arbitrary numbers, essentially, that we can't stop happening. And why is it that these numbers loom so big over us? Why is the idea of getting to 40 and essentially getting to then 41, 42 is exactly the same, makes me feel so anxious and frustrated, fearful of my life and career. And I don't know, do you get the same, Kat? Is that something you share as well, and why is it a thing?
No, definitely. I mean, I think for myself, I do put a lot of like pressure on myself as well to like I have this passion planner at home where you can kind of map out your goals and where you see yourself in 10 years and things like that. And so I do it really detailed to the point where I'm like, okay, this is exactly where I see myself going. And then when I look back at it at the end of the year and I'm like, oh, I didn't manage to do that, didn't do that, didn't do this. And like, you know, you do feel a bit like I need to be doing these things, and you do put so much pressure on yourself. And I think also because like with TikTok and putting sketches and things like that, me and Kat actually put a sketch up last week. It did really well. We got like lots of views and things like that. But then a lot of the comments were like, oh, we're not listening to these two grannies, these two old ladies. Bearing in mind, we're not even that old.
Oh my Jesus. That makes me feel so old.
And it's like, but people see it as like, I think particularly with women, once you're sort of hitting that 30s point, it's like, oh, is she a bit like, I don't know, like she's getting older. And I think also as well, like as you get older, your casting bracket does change, like it does what you're sort of like seen in. So I guess that's a fear of mine as well. And also it's like, does my comedy then change as well as I get older? Like, do I want to be talking about, you know, dick appointments and getting laid when I'm like, but I don't know, like, is that, does that work because I'm getting older? Like, is that something you do more in your 20s than you would do in your 30s? So there's a lot of things I think like that, where you think, okay, do I have to now change because I'm getting older? Like, does my work have to change? When it doesn't, it doesn't have to, but you do start kind of going over these things, I think.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. There's I remember because I got an agent really late and joined Spotlight really late, but I had to tick the, I think I just turned 35 and the box was like 35 to 50 or something. And I was like,
oh, are you in the next category?
It made me feel so old. I was like, and my playing age is like 35 to 45. And I was like, oh, fuck, I'm officially old. And I guess like we have to embrace that, I guess. You can't, I don't have the money to get, you know, plastic surgery. So I can't change that. Not that I would probably do that. So I guess you have to embrace it. But it's funny you say about the TikTok thing, because there is a there's definitely a trend on TikToks of, because there's so many, what I like about TikTok, there's so many different communities and corners and sides of TikTok and stuff. And if you can sort of fall into these really what look like supportive communities and of people that really
look like
sort of stuff.
They look like they're supportive communities.
Well, because I
haven't
dipped into them. No. But like it's a niche-ness, I think. If you find a niche, people will sort of like come together. But there's one of like over 35 TikTok, over 30 TikTok, and there's one where there's like the audio is like a young person going, right, anyone in veteran TikTok who was born before 1994 or something, and then the reaction people going, 1986 or whatever, or 1984 in my case. So it's definitely like a trope, isn't it, or a trend of like younger people looking at older people who really are not that old. But then, to be fair, they're going to become that old at some point. So
they're going to get
to that point, and then maybe it's just one of the circles of life, and then younger people for them will be doing the same thing. But I don't know. It's just one of those things.
And I think because as well, like younger people as well. I mean, when I was 20, you know, 19 or whatever, I didn't really have access to all these things. Like, I mean, TikTok wasn't really a thing. Like, even content creation, like making sketches and things like that, I don't really feel was much of a thing.
Yeah.
There was more of a traditional way of like this, like with stand up, like you gig, you do Edinburgh, you blah, like, you know, whereas now there's so many different routes. And I feel like if maybe I had access to that when I was maybe a bit younger, maybe I'd be a bit more successful by now. I don't know. Like, you see kind of, I think a lot of younger people becoming successful very quickly, but also because there's more access to things. And I guess it's a confidence thing as well. Like, I see so many people who are a lot younger than me that have so much confidence, and I'm like, wow, when I was 18 I definitely didn't have that at all.
Yeah.
But maybe because there's more roots, maybe it gives you more confidence. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting. I was just gonna put, when I was 18 19, we only just got mobile phones. I think
there were no TVs.
it was black and white. Yeah, we only just got mobile phones, I think. God, fuck.
I got my first mobile, I got a 15, so I'm not far behind you, Giles.
I think I had some brick thing that was, oh God, Christ, I don't even, I think it was made by Ferguson. Or
Alex?
Or Philip Savvy. Anyway, it was really shit. We didn't have any of those things. And my first kind of love was playing music and being a band and stuff. And it was like you were saying earlier, Jim, like you just had to go out and gig and hope that an A&R person would turn up. Whereas now you can record something at home on Logic and you can put it on Spotify and you're kind of away. So content,
but at
like
the same
access,
time,
you know, getting content out there is much easier, but there's also the competition's much more.
And
you know,
the pressures. I've seen TikToks from music TikTok, another community I haven't yet got into.
You're too old,
people, man. Saying, from I know. From musicians saying, like, complaining, saying, well, all I want to do is release my music, but actually my management are telling me I have to release a 15 second version, a 30 second version. I have to keep pumping these out. I have to edit these every day, and I'm having to do things. Actually, it's taking me away from the craft of just making my music and putting it out there and perform. And again, it's another world where you have to, has to be so many more strings to your bow.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who's an A&R. I was talking to my friend who's an A&R man, and he said, there was an album that we both wanted to listen to. And I said, oh, they keep releasing, like, they've released about 4 singles. So I thought it was an EP. And he said, oh, no, that's called the Waterfall release. So, like, what they do is they pretty much release every song as a single. And then when the album launches, they're already on there so they can add all the download numbers to it, which is just, I was like, oh, fucking hell, what's the point of that? Just put the album out, for Christ's sake. Mm. You know, anyway, but it's just a different, like I say, it's still about numbers and data, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very different way of doing things. But okay, you're right, Kat, about kind of the access people have to stuff now. And there's definitely a debate about whether some young people are ready for that kind of attention, I guess, or success. And I definitely wouldn't have been at 18, 19. Mm. I'm not even sure I am now at 38. But it's really difficult to look back and be like, well, if only I had this, if only I could do this. And I guess it comes back to a kind of comparison thing, which is really hard as a performer not to do, look at other people and how they're doing. But I guess you have to come back to like what your truth is. And your truth is, I didn't have that. I now do. So I'm now doing what I can. And it's hard not to like beat yourself up or feel, you know, I really struggle or really try not to feel like bitter about the industry of like, okay, why haven't these things happened for me? Because I can't change the past. So I just try and focus on like, okay, I am where I am. I've done what I can. As you say, that I think the planning thing is a great idea. I'm planning for the next steps and I'm doing that rather than looking back and being like, why didn't I have this? Why haven't I done this? But that is a hard thing to do, I think, when you're a performer.
No, definitely. And it's kind of like what I said, like a whole like growth thing as well. Like, you know, as you grow as a person, you end up making better work anyway. So something that you made a couple of years ago, you might be like, oh, that was a bit shit. But like, as you've developed and like developed your talent, like the content you start putting out there is just naturally going to be better anyway, because you just now know what works. Like it's all about trialing and testing and seeing what lands and what doesn't. So yeah, I think as you develop, your work just gets better anyway.
That's interesting. I was just thinking then, actually, just going back to the analogy of like bands and stuff and also with comedy, like you know, you do lots of gigs and you would work on your material and you improve in that way. Whereas I guess if you're putting out content now, it's kind of already out there in the public. And, you know, if it's not quite as, you know, obviously you get better. So you, other than sort of deleting that content, it's kind of out there already, isn't it? So that's a slightly trickier kind of way of negotiating your development, I suppose, in a way. I don't know what I'm getting at, but just that idea that you know, going out and like gigging a lot and performing a lot, you improve that way. But when if you're a content creator, you're putting stuff out straight away and it's there for the public to see. And if it's not, you know, you might in 5 years time be doing your best stuff. That other stuff that wasn't so good is not necessary, is already still out there.
True. But I think with TikTok, I feel like that's almost the point of it as well. I think people know that a lot of your early stuff might not be, my headphones falling out, might not be that great. But as your kind of account develops and you grow more of a following, I think people just know it's going to get better. Because I guess with TikTok, you're sort of just trialing out what works at first. So you might put out, I don't know, a sketch and then, I don't know, a video of you just talking and seeing that gets a lot of views, that does well, so maybe if I combine the two together, and then it just like keeps going. So I think people sort of know that your first video might not be the best thing ever. So and also, I don't know, this shit you see on TikTok anyway, like literally you can put a video up of you like cooking in your kitchen or something and that could go viral. So I feel like people aren't expecting it to be the most amazing thing in the world.
It's TikTok is almost like the Wild West of sort of content creation, that sort of anything, I mean, literally anything goes, and there's almost no rhyme or reason to like what does well and what doesn't. So I think you almost have to like let yourself go a little bit and be like, I'm just going to put stuff out there and what happens.
See, yeah.
I do think as well, audiences, the idea of like a comedy audience has changed, I think. You know, it used to be audiences that watched like a TV show or something. And now it's like, it's followers. So people are following you because they like you and they like your content. And I think they actually like the journey. So if you've been going for 5-10 years and your stuff at the start was really raw, and then you found your kind of way and you got better at editing and you got better at lighting and your stuff improved, I think people like following that journey. They like the idea that they were with you at the start and the almost like the sort of, they're real like stands, you know what I mean? And they are part of that journey as well. That's why Patreon does so well, because people like to be part of, literally part of
the community,
part of your
community. Yeah.
It forms the community. And I think it's, and again, that's something I've been doing comedy 10 years. And again, that's changed as well. Like this idea that like, I think at the start you were just playing to rooms of people and hoping people might like you and maybe follow you on Twitter. Now you're asking people to come on this whole content journey with you, and I think you have to almost change your mindset as to how you progress and how people come along with you. And this is literally something I've thought about in the last couple of weeks. It's taken me 10 years to get there. Of how do I actually refocus on my content and my following, what they want, and progress with that.
I think I might even start doing, what did you call it earlier, that your prediction thing?
Oh, a passion planner.
Passion. I might start doing something like
a passion
that.
Passion planner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it quite therapeutic. Yeah.
So is it how's it set up? Is it in, you said it was like sort of, you might have like a 10-year plan, but is it like year by year or is it month by month? How's it work?
So it's like a standard diary, but then at the front of it you have like a mind map of your, like you put like a goal in the middle. So you're like, okay, what's my like goal for the year? So I might put, okay, I want to be in a comedy TV series. And then you kind of map out how you're going to get to that. So it's like, okay, if I want to do that, maybe I'll do more gigs, or maybe I'll do my own show. That might lead me to that. Oh, maybe I'll write my own show. That might, yeah. So it's like, yeah, you kind of map out the steps to get to that end goal. And I think it's good because it sort of breaks it up for you instead of just thinking of it as a big goal. Like, yeah, oh, I really want to be on a comedy show. But it's like, okay, but how am I going to do that though? Because, you know, the likelihood of that just being gifted to me on a plate by my agent is sometimes not very likely. So it's like, okay, well, what can I do to get to that? So you sort of break it down into like achievable steps. And then it, you know, I don't know, it just makes you feel a bit more like, okay, well, I'm doing stuff towards that goal. So I think it's a good thing.
Well, there's a word that people use a lot, that was obviously manifesting, but I suppose you are kind of, you're manifesting that big thing. And then you're just actually pragmatically trying to logistically find a way to get there
through doing like other steps. And you know, those steps might take you to somewhere else anyway, but I mean, at least you're still doing those things towards the one thing that you want. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. Making things more manageable, I guess, because as you say, like that end goal probably can seem quite overwhelming, but the way to progress in anything is baby steps, is little steps. And then I guess if you can chart that, then it maybe gives you confidence to feel like you are progressing and going in the right direction, or a direction. But nothing happens overnight. You know, nothing happens, as you say, it's handed to you on a plate. You have to, everything takes steps to get there.
Yeah, no, I agree, definitely.
It's interesting you were saying earlier that sometimes you look back and you might be like annoyed with yourself or upset you haven't reached a certain goal, but at the same time, do you look back and sometimes think, oh, actually, you know, it's quite nice to look back and think, wow, look how far I've come.
Yeah, definitely. And then also sometimes I do look back at things that I wanted at that time, and now that's actually changed, where I think, oh, actually, I'm so glad I didn't do that, or oh, that actually wasn't the right thing for me. But at the time it was like, oh, that's the be all and end all, I really want that. But like now it's obviously changed. So I think it was like, what was it? I went for, this was a while ago, I had an audition to be Betty Boop at Universal Studios.
Oh, right.
Wow.
This was years ago. And at the time I really wanted it. I was like, oh, that'd be an amazing contract. I can be Betty Boop. And then I like got to the final stages and everything. And I was like, oh, right, this is amazing. And then I ended up not getting the role and I was really upset about it. But then after a year had passed, I was like, God, that would have been bloody awful being Betty Boop for like 12, like a whole year of doing that voice. Fuck. Like, so it kind of worked out that I didn't get it. But at the time, I was like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing ever. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess things always sort of, I imagine things happen for a reason. I don't know if I necessarily believe that entirely, but I do think things happen that take you to a place and then you are there and then you sort of, you progress from there. So I guess maybe not things happen for a reason, but things happen. I'll leave it at that. Things happen. Mm. But it's okay, isn't it, to like change your mind. But I think it's probably really draining and overwhelming to this one plan. You're working towards it, and then if you don't get it, it's devastating. Or if you do, it's probably really overwhelming. But I think it's okay to have plans and then change them, or change your mind, or feel like you want to do something. That's the beauty of being a human being, being a creative human being. You can do that. And I don't know, I think sometimes it's important to remind ourselves sometimes that thing you wanted, A, as you said, might have turned out to actually be a nightmare job. Or B, it's okay to not want it a year later. You'd have to beat yourself up.
Yeah. And kind of like what you said about the whole, I don't necessarily believe the whole everything happens for a reason, because I've been for auditions where I'm like, yeah, I should have gone that. Like, that didn't happen for a reason. But like, at the same time, you figure out other things. You figure out other things that you enjoy and other things that you want. And then it's a weird thing. I don't know. It's a weird thing, like rejection as well. Like, at the time, it upsets you and sometimes it gets to you. But then it's this weird thing of like, you just pick yourself up and keep going if it's something that you really want. And I don't know, it's a weird thing sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you find it difficult sometimes, those moments of rejection? Because I think, I mean, we all do. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not universally, people don't like being rejected, but it's how, I guess it's like you say, how you move forward with it. But yeah, is it difficult sometimes?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it depends. I think it depends what it is that I'm being rejected for. Like, if it's something that I really, you know, really want and I put so much time into it and thought into it, then it is really hard. And you do get those moments of like, oh, should I just like pack this all in? Should I just not bother doing this anymore? But then it's this weird thing that like happens where I'll have a little day, a day or two, to just kind of think about things and gather my thoughts. And then I'm like, oh, but I've got a show coming up. Oh, but I've also got a gig next week. And oh, I'm doing this. And it's like, well, I can't give up because I've still got things booked and in the diary. So you just sort of keep going, and then other things come up, and then other things come up, and you just have to keep going, because they're still, those are still valid things that you want to do. So it's, yeah, you end up just keep going anyway.
Yeah, I think we said this before on the podcast, like, persistence and resilience, I think, is something that nearly all performers have, and you maybe don't even realize you have it, but by sheer virtue of just keeping going, you do, and you are resilient. And I think it's a really, really important quality. It's a core quality, I think, of humans, essentially, but certainly of creators and performers. And I think it's a really, I have it, and I it took me till recently to realize that I do have that, and I think it's a really worthy quality. And I think it's, yeah, I respect anyone that does what we do, because you have to be resilient. But going back to the rejection things, and it's really almost quite hard to maybe explain to anyone that isn't in this industry why, when you get so much rejection, why you do keep going and pick yourself up again and do the next self-tape or do the next casting or do the next gig or whatever, and why you keep doing it. And the big rejections are hard, obviously, like if you get close to a job you really want, or you have a really shit gig. But I also find like the micro rejections really difficult. So like, if you're doing a bit in a gig and like you really like it and it doesn't land at all, you know, or if you have an okay gig and someone comes up to you afterwards and says, "You look like you really enjoyed that," I think, oh fuck, well, obviously you didn't.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, you're really enjoying yourself up there. There's, or you're like, I don't know, you're like a networking event and other people are getting really praised for their work, and then someone's like, "You're right, Jim." There's like, I think if you're a performer, you're very, or I certainly am, very like self-aware and like self-reflective, and like reflective of how other people talk to me, and you pick up on so many rejections, even if intentional. So that, I find those hard. I don't know if that's something you guys struggle with as well, but those are, it's almost like interpretive things, and they might not even be there, but I find those bits hard about the industry.
Yeah, micro rejections are horrible, because you don't, they're often things you think about afterwards. You don't think about it at the time. And then when you do like the post-match analysis of that conversation or that experience, then you start to dwell on those ones. I think actually, they're difficult to take sometimes, but yeah, I totally agree with you.
No, definitely, especially when you're kind of doing something that day as well. Like, I don't know, you're on your way to work and you're having a really great day, and then you get that email on your phone saying, "Unfortunately, it didn't go your way," you know, but keep in touch. Like, you kind of, it annoys you, but then because you're busy doing other stuff, it's fine. But it's more for me when I get back home and I'm like reflecting on my day, I'm like, oh, actually, I feel quite upset about that. So it's more when you're, I think, sat at home and like reflecting that it kind of gets to you a little bit.
Yeah, completely.
I was going to, okay. Sorry, go on, Jim.
I was going to say, like, you're absolutely right. It's like, if there's enough distractions, you can like fill your life with enough distractions. You can sort of get by, almost like be blind to it, or just like, yeah, but you're right. It's the moments when you're on your own. And it's really hard not to let that overtake things. Like I'm trying to get a new agent at the moment because my agent closed her agency in February because of COVID, which is a shame. And she was a brilliant agent and I really, really liked her. We were on the same page. It was great. So I've been sending out emails and stuff. And I was on holiday last week or week before last. And I shouldn't have looked at my emails, but I got an email back from one agent on the penultimate day saying, can't take anyone on at the moment, et cetera, et cetera. Basically a rejection. And like, it was just the worst timing. I should have just waited till I got home from holiday because that just like ruined my last day of the holiday completely because I was just thinking about that and like, oh, I'm rubbish. What am I doing? Why am I doing this? And it's just one of those things. Like, that's just part of the game. But yeah, and also on holiday, you do have a lot of spare time because I was literally doing nothing every day.
Yeah.
It was just, I needed to almost, I should have actually been practice self-care there and not looked at my work emails until I got back. But
it's difficult not to, though. It's the problem when you've got a phone in your hand all the time. It's difficult not to to dive into those things. I was going to ask you again about, you said like your first kind of comedy or live performance was an open mic thing.
Tell
me about that, because I'm always intrigued how, because obviously you said it went well, and I think a lot of successful comedians seem to say that first gig was, and I don't know if that's, again, it's pulling you in, isn't it? And maybe you're always chasing that, like that feeling of that first gig again.
That fuzzy feeling.
Tell me about that, because I'm really always intrigued about the first ones, how it went and what kind of material were you doing then?
Well, I did my first gig at Comedy Virgins, which was at the Cavendish Arms. Really nice night. And I think the only reason it appealed to me was because I kind of saw that it's for beginners, a lot of newbies do it, people who've never done stand-up before. So I was like, okay, that's going to be a nice ease in. It's not just some random pub somewhere. So I was just like, okay, this sounds good. And I went in more with like similar content that I do now, to be honest. I went in more with the dating stories and kind of like sex and relationships. I wore like PVC leggings and heels. I just went all out because I thought, fuck it. Like, even if not, you know, if people don't enjoy it and don't like it, I never have to do this ever again. It's fine.
Yeah.
And it was nice. It was just a really like supportive crowd, and you do get quite a buzzy feeling, I guess, like doing your own work as well. Like, this is my own thing, like my own stuff that I've written. And you feel, I guess, a sense of like, oh, I'm actually really proud. I'm really proud of this. Like, this is something that I've, you know, done on my own content. People are laughing. So yeah, it was a good experience. And I think that's why I kept going with it, because it was very supportive. People liked what I was doing. And I was like, okay, maybe there's something in this. Maybe I can take this a bit further if I work on it. So yeah, it was a good experience, definitely.
Was it like a feeling of like, because I think people maybe who aren't in the comedy industry look at it and think, oh my God, that's like, it's so difficult to do. Like, it's really glamorous. But then if you go and do your first night and you make people laugh, there's like a, oh, I can do this moment. And I think that's a really empowering sort of feeling to have.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. You feel, and it's different. It was interesting because I thought it would be almost similar to just acting like on stage. I thought, oh, it's probably just, it's completely different to like, because you're being you, but also like how I do my stand-up is like, it's like an exaggerated version of myself. So it's not necessarily me. It's me like on a night out with the girls and I've had a couple of drinks. Like, that's more what I do in my stand-up. But I thought, oh, it's going to be similar to just acting and playing a role, or like, oh, it's just going to be like doing a monologue on stage. But it's just so different. So it's almost like kind of transitioning from that to more a stand-up style rather than I'm an actor. So I guess that was quite difficult about it, I think.
Yeah, and you find your way, don't you? You sort of find what works for you and what you enjoy about your performances, and you sort of find your voice, if I'm being sort of very theatrical about it. It's interesting you say about wearing the PVC leggings and stuff, because again, this is something
that's really you've tried, Jim.
Recently, I tried it. Didn't.
Yeah.
The heels were just too uncomfortable. It just didn't. Yeah, I tried. I thought I'd give it a go. Because you do actually, as a stand up on stage, image is actually really important. And I, for years, I just would like wear a t-shirt and jeans and like didn't really think about it. And then recently I've been trying to sort of dress. I mean, I really haven't upped my game massively, but I'll put on like maybe a check shirt or something. I bought myself some like
I put on a gingham
really
shirt.
Pushing the boat I bought this one check shirt. I've actually got two.
I got a clean I wore a clean t-shirt the other night for a gig.
I've bought myself some like colourful New Balance trainers, which I really like. Because in my eyes, that projects a bit of confidence on stage. Like if I'm wearing colourful stuff, like I'm someone that's confident. And I think if you can appear as confident in the first few seconds on stage, then that translates to the audience and they think, oh, I'm going to be okay with this guy. But I think as well, and it's probably more, I mean, you know, tell me, but like more prevalent for sort of female acts that you probably are having to think about the image you do on stage as well, because maybe you're putting out a certain persona or image that you want people to sort of buy into. And actually, aesthetically, that comes into it as well as material.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's all part of the act at the end of the day, like from what you're wearing to what you're saying. And it's interesting because when I did start stand up and I did kind of go in with the like PVC leggings and heels and things like that, I feel like watching other stand-ups and doing other gigs after that, and I, you know, a lot of people weren't dressing up for their sets. Both men and women were wearing just jeans and a t-shirt, and I thought, oh, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe I should be dressing down and kind of fitting in with that sort of like aesthetic. Like, is that taking away from me being funny, like dressing up and things like that? But now as time has gone past, a lot of people are sort of adopting that anyway, the whole like dressing up for their set and things like that. So, but before I used to think, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. Like, should I be dressing down? Should I make it just about what I'm saying rather than, I guess, how I look? But I feel like it adds to it, and it was giving me confidence anyway. Like if I did perform just in a hoodie and jeans and trainers, I don't know, I'd feel like I'm going to the gym or something. Like it wouldn't feel like I'm about to do a performance. So I think it helps me to be more confident as well.
Also, I was thinking, if you're sort of performing as an exaggerated version of yourself, then obviously you're going to exaggerate your image and everything, isn't you? So if it's a sort of characterization of you, then I think it makes sense to put on, you know, put on a kind of costume or a uniform, or you know, really play up on that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It was just quite funny because like my like early gigs that I was doing, a lot of the time I would turn up and say, oh, I'm here for the gig, and they'd say, oh, you're here to watch, right? And I was like, no, I'm here to perform. Yeah, that's me. And they're like, oh really? I'm okay. I've just dressed up, okay? It's an effort. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. But yeah, it's funny now though, because I see a lot of people dressing up now, more forget, like women and men actually as well. So yeah, it is changing a little bit.
That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder what's brought about that kind of change then. I wonder, making more of an effort.
I don't know, maybe lockdown, like everyone wants
you just want to get dressed up.
Want to get dressed up and be out, and people are maybe taking a bit more of a, taking a bit more seriously, or figuring out like does how I dress fit with my act or what I'm doing. I don't know. So, and I think it does help, like you're creating the full performance, I guess, with that.
Yeah,
so
I think so. And I think if it gives you confidence, then obviously do it. Like if it's going to help you feel more confident on stage, because you will give a better performance of doing that, which is again why I wear the colorful trainers, because they just make me feel brilliant. But I think back in the day, like stand-ups would wear suits and stuff, wouldn't they? Like I'm talking like years ago,
Bob Monkhouse and stuff,
weirdly, like. Yeah, they sort of were more tailored. I remember once as well, Mark Dolan, who has had a very interesting trajectory recently.
It's kind of a bit GB news.
He used to be such a nice guy, and he's just gone. He's drunk the Kool-Aid, basically. But he told me once that he would go on stage with a jacket on, not necessarily like suit and tie or anything, just like a jacket. And 5 minutes into his set, if it was going well, he would take the jacket off and like hang it on the mic stand. And that was his signal to the audience that like, I'm super relaxed up here. And it would make the audience feel relaxed. Oh, this guy's taking his jacket off. He must be like, and it would make them feel better. And it was like a weird little, I mean, very clever, actually, Pavlovian trigger for the audience to be like.
It's like when Rory Stewart took his tie off in that
exactly
leadership
like
debate.
He was channeling Mark Dolan. But it's interesting because a lot of it does come into kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of behavioural, not tics, but like behavioural studies almost of. Because audiences want to be relaxed. They want to like relax, know that you're in charge, have a good time and not worry. Whereas sometimes you can see acts go on stage, and I've been this act, that you go on with a nervous energy and you can feel the audience go, and then they're not sort of like ready for your material to laugh. And so there is, it's just interesting that little thing he did. And I guess there are probably people that study this kind of thing that can tell you if you do this little thing or act in some sort of way, it relaxes your audience. But I think in the same way, dressing how you want to feel confident is the same sort of thing, because audiences are probably like, wow, this is a confident person, I'm sure they're going to be great, and hopefully relax into it. So there's so many like social sciences around performing on stage. And again, this is something I've learned through doing it. Not I came to the industry very cold with no experience, but it's interesting that kind of like the social sciences around performing. It's so much more than just, unfortunately, just like the words you say.
Yeah, definitely. And there was this thing about like if you take a sip of water or something during your set, it means you're like super. So I thought, oh, I'm going to try that one day. I'm going to try that. It's the worst sip of water I've ever in my whole life. I was like my hand was like shaking.
Water
but I was like, this is going to make everyone feel really relaxed. I'm going to do a sip of water. But it gave me so much anxiety. But I feel like once I mastered the sip of water, then it's like, yes, it's all good.
It's like they say, never, like if you're nervous, never have like a piece of paper on stage if you're doing a speech or something, because that accentuates your, if you're doing a best man speech, don't hold hold cue cards, don't hold a bit of paper, because like it will accentuate your nervousness. But these are all things we learn, aren't they? It's just all things we learn about what works for us, what works for the audience. Like it is kind of a game. It is all this game that you kind of have to navigate through, as well as then writing good material and being a good performer. It's a lot. It's a lot to try and take on and do, I think.
Catherine, it's been so lovely to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Good luck with Edinburgh as well.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll let you know
good
how it goes.
It'll
be interesting, but thank you. It's exciting / sort of nerve-wracking at the same time. But I like doing the show, so that's important. So at least hopefully I'll have 21 enjoyable hours at the Fringe, and then the rest of it will be what it is. Thank you. Fingers crossed it'll be okay.
Awesome.
Well, there you go. Thank you so much to Kat for joining us on the podcast. What a fantastic person, brilliant performer and creative and stand-up and actor and making big waves and doing big things as well. So we appreciate her coming on and telling us about her process and lots of things, really. And I would definitely be doing what does she call it? I forgot the name already, the planner.
Passion planner.
That's the one. I was thinking, for some reason, I had pineapple planner, which is something very different.
That's just
for your fruit and veg. Passion planner is a great idea. It does come up a lot on the podcast, the idea of like actually planning things out. So it's interesting to hear from someone that's really worked for her. And I keep thinking about it every time it comes up. So I think maybe that's something I'll try and implicate myself. Implicate? Is that the right word? That's the wrong word. Implement. That's the word.
Yeah.
Implicate. That's a terrible word. I might try and do that because it sounds like it's quite effective.
Yeah, really useful thing to do, I think. I mean, I don't do it either, but it is something that is useful. I know quite a few people that do that. I guess it is just kind of writing down those manifestations that you're trying to make, which is good. I think it's important to write things down because I forget stuff all the time. So you might manifest something and you forgot what you manifested. And then you might end up doing it and thought,
Yeah.
Did I want that to happen or not?
When it's happened,
So deal with it. Yeah, I'm a list maker, definitely. So I think it's, but I have so many, they're all over the place. So I think maybe sort of like trying to make that all a bit more.
Do you write them all over the walls way and stuff?
No, I was not. I'm not.
Like I'm some
not
mad
guy. What's his name? Memento.
Yeah, your guy Pierce. Yeah,
tattoos of them on my body. No, but I have notes on my phone and stuff, and I've just put up a big whiteboard here in my office next to me, so to try and write stuff down on that. But it's all a bit all over the place. I think just trying to like categorize it or make it a bit neater probably will help me sort of sift through it and stuff. But yeah, so something to work on.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're always working on ourselves, aren't we? Constantly.
Oh, quite. Yeah, quite. Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, thank you very much to Katharina for joining us. It was an absolute joy to talk to her. And do follow her. Her handle's in the show notes and check out all the things she's doing. And we really appreciate her coming on. Oh, and check out our Patreon, of course. We've got extra content with Kat, as we do with all our guests each week at patreon.com/blankpodcast.
Yeah, she tells us about some bad gig.
Exactly, the real juicy stuff.
Yeah,
that's what we want to. That's what we save for our patrons. Mm. So yeah, that and thanks to our patrons as well for their support. We love them loads and loads and loads.
We do.
So
we do.
Thank you. Well, that's it, Giles. I'm going to go and take an aspirin because this headache is not.
Yeah,
going
go and
away.
Have a lie down, mate.
I think I will go and have a lie down. Yeah, I've earned it.
I think you have, and like the Queen won't mind if you're having a rest.
She won't. She won't mind at all. I think it's very much something she encourages.
Yeah, especially on her Jubilee day.
Is that today?
Well, I don't know if it's today, but it's the Jubilee weekend we're recording this on, isn't it? So.
Oh yeah, because of course it's bank holiday. Oh my god, I can't get the words out. It's a bank holiday.
Yeah, on a Thursday, which feels wrong.
Yeah, but I just don't really do bank holidays anyway because of. Sort of being freelance.
Well, you're just working, aren't we? I mean, I'm working.
Register.
Yeah, this is working.
We're just working now. Alcoholics. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're just it's constant, isn't it? Anyway, right, I'm going for a lie down.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, mate. Good to see you. See you next week.
And you, yes. Course. For back another blank another podcast.
Indeed. Until then, take care, everyone. See you again soon. Bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is a Glassbox Media Podcast. Thank you.